How can a microchip manufacturer keep track of 250 million control points at once?
How can technology behind animated movies help enterprises reimagine their future?
Built for Change listeners know those answers and more. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein. We're the hosts of Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
We talk to leaders of the world's biggest companies to hear how they've reinvented their business to create industry-shifting impact.
And how you can, too.
New episodes are coming soon, so check out Built for Change wherever you get your podcasts.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, after the dramatic return of John McCain, the Senate narrowly votes to begin work on the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, then promptly votes down a plan to do exactly that. And the president steps up the attacks on his attorney general. Asked whether he intends to fire Jeff Sessions, he says, "Time will tell." It's Wednesday, July 26th.
Please join me in reciting a Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
It's Tuesday afternoon in the United States Senate.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ever since the election, Senate Republicans have been fighting to repeal the Affordable Care Act. But after 6 months, they're only here.
Look, we can't let this moment slip by.
Voting not to repeal or replace Obamacare, but merely to allow for debate to begin about its future.
Now, Mr. President, on the vote that we'll have today, in just a couple of hours, senators will have an important decision to make.
The fate of health care for tens of millions of Americans rests on an arcane legislative process overseen by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. To rewrite the landmark health care law, McConnell must win 51 votes.
7 years after Obamacare was imposed on our country, we will vote on the critical first step to finally move beyond its failures.
The math is very much in doubt. Republicans, who control the Senate by just two seats, can only afford two defections. Senator Susan Collins has virtually promised to vote no. Half a dozen other Republican senators are still undecided.
I move to proceed to calendar number 120, H.R. 1628.
The clerk will report.
Around 2:30 p.m., McConnell introduces the motion to proceed. And protests erupt from the Senate gallery.
Is there sufficient second?
The senators are called in alphabetical order.
The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Alexander.
Aye.
Ms. Baldwin. Mr. Barrasso.
Aye.
The first no vote.
Ms. Collins.
Comes from Susan Collins.
Mr. Corker.
Aye.
Jerry Moran, who last week derailed Republican plans to repeal Obamacare.
Mr. Moran.
Sides with McConnell.
Aye.
Next to be called.
Ms. Murkowski.
Is Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who, after conferring with Susan Collins, becomes the second Republican to vote no.
Senators voting in the negative. Collins and Murkowski.
Republicans cannot lose another vote. The Senate is still waiting on two Republicans. One of them, Ron Johnson, has been an outspoken critic of McConnell. Now, cameras capture McConnell and Johnson in heated conversation. And then, for the first time since being diagnosed with brain cancer, Senator John McCain enters the Senate chamber. After hugging, McCain and Johnson, the last two Republican senators, cast their votes.
Mr. McCain, aye. Mr. Johnson, aye.
Both men side with McConnell. That brings the vote count to 50-2, one vote shy of victory for the Republicans.
The senator is not recorded.
I vote no.
Then the remaining 48 Democrats start voting no, one after another.
Mr. Schumer, no.
Mr. President.
Mr. Durbin.
No.
48 no's from Democrats, plus two Republican defections, brings the vote to a tie. 50 to 50.
On this vote, the yeas are 50 and the nays are 50.
Under Senate rules, the tie-breaking vote falls to Vice President Mike Pence.
The Senate being equally divided, the Vice President votes in the affirmative, and the motion is agreed to.
With that, the Senate agrees to debate the future of American health care.
The senior senator from Arizona is recognized.
McCain has saved the vote, but just moments after it's done.
But I stand here today looking a little worse for wear, I'm sure.
He returns to the floor to deliver a message.
We're getting nothing done, my friends. We're getting nothing done. And all we've really done this year is confirm Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Our health care insurance system is a mess. We all know it. Those who support Obamacare and those who oppose it. Something has to be done. We Republicans have looked for a way to end it and replace it with something else without paying a terrible political price. We haven't found it yet, and I'm not sure we will.
Just hours later, Republican leadership suffered a setback when McConnell rushed a late-night vote on his most comprehensive plan to replace Obamacare, and it fell far short of the votes needed. The debate is scheduled to continue this morning. We'll be right back.
I'm Shane Goldmacher. I'm a national political correspondent for the New York Times, covering the 2024 election. I have off and on for years covered the role of money in politics, and that means sifting through tens of thousands of line items in campaign reports, looking at who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, who's donating to these campaigns, who's reserved the most ads on Google, who's this billionaire changing the shape of the race with a single check. Look, the campaign spin, the strategists tell you one thing, the numbers don't really lie, and those numbers help us ask the right questions. That's what's so special about the New York Times. We get to tap the collective knowledge and wisdom of my colleagues who have expertise in every nook and cranny of this country and this campaign trail to tell you the full story of what's happening in these critical moments in the last few weeks of the election. If this kind of coverage is important to you, you can support it by subscribing to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
So Jeff Sessions takes the job, gets into the job, recuses himself. I then have, which frankly, I think is very unfair to the president.
Jeremy Peters, a few days ago, President Trump basically told the New York Times that he wished he'd never appointed Jeff Sessions as his attorney general.
I would have said, thanks, Jeff, but I can't, you know, I'm not going to thank you. It's extremely unfair, and that's a mild word, to the president.
What was that all about?
The president, Michael, harbors this lingering resentment towards Jeff Sessions for recusing himself from the Russia investigation. But as Sessions saw it, and as other Republicans have seen it, including allies of President Trump's, Jeff Sessions had to get out of the way of an investigation that he is in the thick of.
And remind me why he was in the thick of it.
Well,
the Russian ambassador apparently sent a staffer to my office. I did not see him. And asked for a meeting, as so many of the ambassadors were doing.
Sessions had contact with Russian officials, which he did not initially disclose. And these have all since become swept up in the investigation into whether or not the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians.
They said that since I had involvement with the campaign, I should not be involved in any campaign investigation. I have studied the rules and considered their comments and evaluation. I believe those recommendations are right and just.
Therefore, so what has President Trump said since those comments to the Times? He's been kind of accelerating this critique.
You're exactly right. I mean, and it's unfolding in real time. It's like, you know, a window into Trump's frustrations with Jeff Sessions through his Twitter feed. It's like this ongoing cyberbullying campaign to drive his attorney general from office, where at first he called him beleaguered, which, of course, paled in comparison to what he called him at 6 a.m. on Tuesday morning, weak, saying that Jeff Sessions was not forcefully going after Hillary Clinton, as if what the Justice Department needed to be focusing on at this time was investigating his chief political opponent.
So, Jeremy, why, as best we can tell, is the president doing what he's doing to Jeff Sessions so publicly, essentially shaming his attorney general for millions upon millions of people to see?
Because he wants him to quit. I think it's as simple as that. He's trying to drive him out of office because he knows, he understands that it would look terrible for him to fire an attorney general who essentially did the right thing. I mean, let's not lose sight of that. But Jeff Sessions did the legally proper thing by recusing himself from this investigation.
I think the attorney general is doing a fine job, and I think he made the right decision to recuse himself from the Russia matter.
So, Jeremy, members of Congress, which you covered for years, have come to Sessions' defense. What are they saying?
What they're saying is that he's a man of integrity. He's a man of conviction.
And a former colleague of theirs, I guess we should
say. Former colleague of theirs for 2 decades in the Senate he served. And you had Ted Cruz, who was furious with Jeff Sessions for endorsing Donald Trump during the presidential campaign.
And not him.
And who is allegedly someone rumored to be on Trump's shortlist for attorney general should he decide to fire Jeff Sessions. Ted Cruz come out and say that he stood by Sessions and that he was not under consideration for the attorney general post. You have Lindsey Graham calling Jeff Sessions, quote, one of the most decent people I've ever met, a rock solid conservative, but above else, he believes in the rule of law. And right there, that's an allusion to the fact that most Republicans, almost every single one of them, thinks that Jeff Sessions did the right thing by recusing himself from this investigation, even though that has infuriated Donald Trump.
So by and large, these are our conservative figures coming out in defense of Sessions very openly. And I imagine this is complicated by the fact that Sessions is a big figure in the conservative world, right?
That's right. Before Donald Trump burst onto the political scene with this kind of conservative, nationalistic, America first vision, Jeff Sessions was that voice in the Senate. So the two of them kind of had an early mind meld, and Sessions became, along with people we now know as almost as household names, Stephen Bannon and Stephen Miller, who worked as Jeff Sessions' communications director in the Senate, the three of them worked with Trump to help form the architecture of this nationalist, populist, conservative worldview.
Sounds like what you're saying is that Sessions provided kind of the brain trust to Trump, the candidate, and now the White House.
That's exactly right. And somebody who also was one of the first to stick his neck out for President Trump at a time when doing so was far from politically fashionable.
I told Donald Trump, this isn't a campaign, this is a movement. Look at what's happening.
And there's a scene of them together in Sessions' home state of Alabama.
You know, over the years, I've developed a lot of friendships. And some people are good, and some people are okay, and some people are lousy, right? And some people are great. But I was so honored because I have a man who's respected by everybody here, greatly respected, and somebody that I have a lot of respect for. He's really the expert, as far as I'm concerned, on borders, on so many different things. But
Trump is just heaping effusive praise on Sessions because, you know, as Trump put it then, he was the one person Trump sought out for advice on what was at that point, you know, a very policy thin campaign.
So Trump was proud to have Sessions and his credentials on his side.
Oh, absolutely. Sessions was a tremendously helpful validator for conservatives. They looked at Sessions, saw his support for Trump, and said, okay, maybe I can put aside some of my misgivings about this guy and go along with it because I may not trust Donald Trump 100% or can ever be completely sure where he's going, but I know where Jeff Sessions is.
So then what happens to President Trump if Sessions, this validator, leaves the White House? Does he lose the support from the conservative world?
Donald Trump will take a lot of grief from the Republican base if he fires Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. They will see it as a slap in the face. And what I think this is really about is their fear that the Trump administration is losing its conservative nationalist conscience, which Jeff Sessions was emblematic of. You know, they look at an administration that has members of Donald Trump's immediate family, Wall Street bankers, and old pals from New York. And they see people like Jeff Sessions as kind of the only check on those more liberal-leaning folks who aren't going to be loyal to the conservative agenda that Donald Trump got elected to pursue. The way that Breitbart put it, if Sessions goes, that would be, quote, a devastating blow to the prestige and prominence of the nationalist populist underpinnings of the wider Trump movement.
I frankly think that Sessions is the kind of man Trump needs in his administration.
What I saw as a sign that this was going to be very problematic was on Monday, when Rush Limbaugh, who's kind of a lagging indicator of where the Trump base is, he said...
But it's also kind of a little bit discomforting, unseemly for Trump to go after such a loyal supporter this way.
And I think that really echoes what a lot of conservatives feel about how this has all played out.
Jeremy, finally, knowing what you know about Jeff Sessions, is this a man who you think wants to stay on as attorney general at this point?
I think Jeff Sessions' attitude at this point is, let Trump fire me. I did the right thing. So if Donald Trump wants to cross that line, go right ahead. But he's going to have to shove me first.
But can he function as attorney general with a president who now quite clearly and unambiguously doesn't want him there?
You know, I think he can, because we've seen a lot of situations in the past where Trump has soured on an aide. He certainly nurses a grudge and has a hard time letting them go, but he warms and cools to people pretty easily. And I think that if Sessions survives this week, I could totally foresee him serving and actually maybe getting on in a productive role with the president for some time to come.
Jeremy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
On Tuesday morning, the president's new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, talked to conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt about the growing tension between the president and the attorney general.
It's clear the president wants him gone. Is that an Anthony?
I have an enormous amount of respect for the attorney general, but I do know the president pretty well, and if there's this level of tension in the relationship that's public, you're probably right.
And on Tuesday afternoon,
I'm wondering if you would talk to us a little bit about whether you've lost confidence in Jeff Sessions.
The president took a question from a reporter at a press conference.
I told you before, I'm very disappointed with the attorney general, but we will see what happens. Time will tell. Time will tell.
Here's what else you need to know today.
If you want to work in the West Wing, you got to stop leaking.
Anthony Scaramucci says he has a plan to end the embarrassing leaks coming from inside the White House press office.
I'm going to fire everybody. That's how I'm going to do it. You're either going to stop leaking or you're going to get fired.
On Tuesday, Scaramucci started to fulfill that pledge, telling a reporter he planned to fire Michael Shorn, an assistant press secretary he viewed as disloyal to the president. Within hours, Short had resigned.
If I got to get this thing down to me and Sarah Huckabee, then the leaking will stop.
You're prepared to do that?
1,000%. I've got the authority from the president.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.